You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Shout out to a couple of new listeners in the King City region.
Okay.
Jack O'Neill, my nephew, His beautiful mother, Daniela O'Neill. Apparently, they love the show, and they're listening as we speak.
There we go.
And this is the first time, or they kind of come and go over the years, and they're just letting you know now that they're big fans of the show.
I think it was one of those things where my brother has the show on quite often, and she probably turned an eye. And finally, she just said, screw it, I'll watch.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
That's all we're looking for.
Daniela, thanks for the viewership and the support.
Okay. Shout out.
Shout out to my sister-in-law.
Up in King City.
Yes.
The pride of King City.
A chicken parm dinner, possibly.
Really? That's what you're angling for here, really, is a free chicken parm dinner.
Hazy, right? When's the last time you dummied a parm?
It's been actually a long time. I don't think I've had a parm over COVID.
I think I am
parmless since the shutdown.
I thought you said that's your go-to feed.
Well, it is my preferred if I have the option, but I personally am not, you know, prone to making it. I just don't know how to operate a chicken parm.
What was your go-to feed during COVID? Did you have a little secret squirrel spot where you're like, I'm going to pick up that little item and
no,
I'm
not
going
really.
To make a mess of it?
Not really. I didn't have any like cravings or anything. It was almost disappointing that at no point did I think, you know, when everything opens up, that's the spot I got to hit.
Yeah.
I try to spread it out, spread the love, you know. But no, I haven't had a good parm in a long time. And the next time I have it, I'll let you know, buddy.
Lasagna?
I'm looking forward to it.
Like that's the thing.
No lasagna
too.
Either, actually.
Man, oh man, we're missing out here.
What have you been eating? Swiss every night?
No, we haven't ordered a lot of food. We've ordered a little bit of food and picked up a lot of food, but barbecuing a fair amount. And just kind of going through the standard practice, man. Like just kind of your standard lunches and dinners and whatever. I don't know. Nothing really outrageous. Not even really drinking a lot anymore either, which like the first couple of months, I wasn't drinking. At no point was I like, wow, I had way too much to drink because I'm always at home. But my wife and I were having a glass of wine almost every night. You know, like
it was just
like a glass of white over dinner, and then the kids are down, I'll have another glass, maybe a beer, and then shut it down. But like never having like big nights, and sometimes he'd have Zoom parties. I went on Zoom the other day for the first time in like 3 months.
The first
3 months of COVID, I was on it almost every other day, and I totally forgot. I just stopped going on Zoom, and actually it was kind of I think reassuring to me. That like real life is going to get back at some point. What that timeline is, I have no idea. But remember when everyone was like, well, we'll just be having Zoom parties for the rest of time. No, we're not. Like now we're on patios. We're meeting people in our backyards. You know, the bubbles have expanded. There's things happening that allow for some interaction, like human to human, as opposed to screen to screen. But, I haven't been drinking wine or beers or anything in the past couple of months. I just kind of hit a limit. I'm like, all right, I'm just doing my thing and watching sports every night.
I can't remember the last time I was drunk. I think it was February in Nashville. Like that's it.
That's your go-to town. Have you ever been sober in Nashville?
Like, have you ever just gone to? When I played, I would, you know, like I was a professional. I didn't go and get cooned and like. I've been sober in Nashville, but when you're there and you don't have to play hockey, why are you sober in Nashville? Like, unless you don't drink, like then that I respect that.
Well,
but I'm
obviously,
saying if you're a drinker, if you enjoy having some beers or some vodka and listening to live music, why would you not do that in Nashville or in Vegas or in one of these cities that you would enjoy? Like, I think that's a bucket list thing.
It's a good question, though. Like, what's going on in Nashville? You know, like, is Nashville alive?
It is. I've seen people, you know, when, you know, the hashtag Coviets or Covidiots or whatever.
Covidiots, yeah.
Yeah. They'll show, like, the strip in Nashville, and the bars are just rammed. Like,
getting after it.
Yeah. I think some people have had enough, and other people are trying to be respectful of it.
Yeah, I guess it depends on where you are. You know, yep. What state, what province, what city.
Agreed.
Everyone's handling it differently. So the NFL's off and running, and last night the crowd was, you know, it was 15,000 people, and it was spread out. And I think Michaels and Collinsworth hit the nail on the head. It was as if it was a 51-7 game with 5 minutes to go, or a Dolphins crowd. But it was football, and it felt like football. And when they were playing and it was shooting and it was under the bright lights, it felt real to me. It looked real to me. I love that it was back, and I'm sure our next guest is as well. He is from FS1, longtime NFLer. Here is Marcellus Wiley. For an opening night, now that we've been through it, Marcellus, how normal did that feel for you last night?
It was just maybe one standard deviation off normal in terms of what I saw on the field made it seem as close as you could to what normal looks like in terms of intensity, in terms of anticipation, energy, and you're really getting excited about it, and saw some great performances from certain players, more on the Chiefs than on the Texans. But yet and still, I think the Texans walked in with lower expectations. If you looked at their personnel issues and the loss of talent highlighted by DeAndre Hopkins now being the Arizona Cardinal, you just thought that this game could go the way it actually went. And it took its twists and turns. You know, you didn't see a Chiefs team start the game off on fire, even though they had the touchdown but drop pass. They were blanked in the first quarter, but then they just have too much talent and they have too many weapons, and they were able to adjust to the zone coverage that they weren't anticipating. It. They came out thinking that they were going to see man, just like Houston had played mostly man in the first two outings that they faced them last year, but they came out with a different wrinkle and they adjusted and then they started to roll. The only thing that took me off is really just the optics of the crowd. I hate to get biblical with people, but there's a Bible statement, Bible passage that says, be hot or be cold. Don't be lukewarm. I'll spit you out my mouth. And I use that in so many things in this world. Basically, don't ride the fence. So I'd rather have seen no one in the crowd or a full stadium. Anything in between kind of makes me feel a little weird, because that's how I played football at Columbia. We would have spotty crowds, as I call them. Like, you see a pocket here, you see a pocket here. And it made me always think, like, where's everybody at? But if I saw no one there, it would just feel like practice or just feel like no one could be here. But it's weird to be a fence-riding crowd, like, in the middle somewhere. That feels worse than just having no one there for me. Other than that, it looked like normal football, like you guys said. I was excited.
Yeah, it was fun to have it back, and Andy Reid's facial kind of stole the night.
Oh.
You know, wasn't that incredible? Like, how would you take him seriously if you were on that sideline?
Poor Andy. Like, one, you better make sure your mic and headset work, because you're never reading his lips. You don't even see him under there. You don't even know if he's there. I mean, that was the funniest thing. I rewinded that like five times to show my wife, and she kept saying, oh, at least he's being safe. I was like, no, you're missing the joke. Look at him. Like, he doesn't even know what he's looking at. He doesn't know what he's reading. It's just hilarious.
Do you think he brings that thing? What kind of contraption does he have next week? He can't bring that thing back, can he?
No, man. As everyone has found out, wearing masks, sunglasses, they don't go together with a mask. It's just, they fog up instantly, let alone you're talking about having a shield on. And your Andy Reid, who I would give props to, looked like he was down a few LBs in my eyes. Like, I looked at Andy Reid, I was like, oh, he didn't have a Super Bowl hangover. He had a Super Bowl diet. Like, he lost a few pounds, looked good, obviously called the game with great command and did his job. But that concoction, whatever that facial shield is, that's in the trash right now, and they're at the drawing board for this week.
So, overreaction Monday is a phrase we use in week one. I guess this is overreaction Friday. But you knew after Kansas City put forth a performance like that, and basically the only new player was likely the best player on the field, and that's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who looks like he's just going to be a stud running back, rookie or otherwise, all throughout the year. And you knew people were going to start suggesting, you know, 16-0, here we go. There's no denying the Chiefs are the team to beat. But 16-0 early in the season, to me, that type of projection never makes sense. And it just never happens historically. Like, it's not going to happen, right? Like, where do you stand on that, Marcellus?
I would bet $1 that it's not going to happen, and then I would double down on that same bet, saying if it does happen, you better look out if you're a Chiefs fan. That's not good news. Here's the thing. Patrick Mahomes in September has not lost a game yet. He's been amazing. Like, he has records in terms of September production since the AFL-NFL merger. So he's an all-timer already in terms of production in this month, starting the season early and hitting the ground fast. That said, it's interesting, no matter how he's played in September, he's never lost a game. Last year, they lost 4 games. The year before, they lost 4 games. So somehow, some way, whether it's they beat themselves, injuries, hey, an opponent is great out there as well, they'll stumble somewhere. But what if they don't? This is an interesting stat. Since 2000, there have been 8 teams that were 10-0. So off to a huge start, fast start. You know how many of those teams won a Super Bowl? 1. So it's almost like you need to get seasoned. You need to get punched up. You need to get scratched up a little bit in the regular season, because it doesn't bode well for all the teams that look like they're going to be amazing because of their perfect record. So it's okay. Last year they won a Super Bowl with 4 losses. The year before, they were 1 offsides away from winning the AFC Championship game and going to the Super Bowl with 4 losses. So this whole perfection-seeking argument, I hope they fall a little short of that so they can have the ultimate goal, which is the championship again.
Marcella, since I took this job, one thing happens every year before the football season, and then the follow-up happens as well. And it's the talk about and people gushing over the Dallas Cowboys, how they're stacked at every position, how they're going to dominate. This is their year. And then it turns into mediocrity basically halfway through the season. Are you buying in once again to everybody gushing over America's team, the Cowboys, again this year?
Yes, I'm buying in.
Oh, come on, Jim.
Yeah. They know how much sugar to put in the Kool-Aid, and it'll make me drink it every single year. Like, this is the genius of Jerry Jones, marketing genius, just being a businessman with tremendous acumen. One, he has the highest value franchise in all of sports. And it's not because of real estate value, because it's pretty cheap to live and build in Dallas. It's because he knows how to keep them in the news cycle. And there's 2 bottom lines. There's the one that you have to do well, and then there's one you have to do good. And they do well. Like, think about this team in terms of how much they've actually done in accomplishment. Like, I know a lot of times we want to say, oh, it was 24, 30 years ago when they won their Super Bowls. But they have 3 Lombardis. This franchise has 5. It's only behind the Pittsburgh Steelers and New England Patriots. So there's a 3rd all-time winningest franchise, with the number 1 marketing business acumen CEO owner in Jerry Jones. Then they actually go out there and they keep it competitive, but they fall short. Now, when they fall short, every year we see that the talent is there. It's just the execution falls short of that talent. But let's not deny them of the reality. This team is loaded this year again. And the thing that gets in their way will either be the execution, the play calling, or the fact that this team just underachieved. But that doesn't mean I can't bet on them again because of the failures of yesteryear and the failures of last year. New head coach, new offensive mind in terms of Mike McCarthy, talent everywhere. Some of those guys coming off disappointing years, so a chip on their shoulder. Jerry knows how to sell the Kool-Aid, brother, and I always look forward to drinking some of it.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we'll find. Well, I guess it starts Sunday night, the Sunday nighter at the Rams, Cowboys-Rams. Marcellus Wiley here on Overdrive. So right before we had you on, the news broke from the NBA that Daniel House, he's left the bubble. He's out. His whole team's following him anyway. I mean, the Rockets are done. The Lakers and Clippers are meeting in the Western Final. But House, I guess the investigation was complete, and it sounds like it was someone in his room for a couple of hours that was not supposed to be on campus. I think we can all cross the T's and dot the I's on that one and figure out exactly what was going on.
Reading.
Yes. Read a little, just a quick kumbaya reading session, and then we're out. But he's done, and I guess already people from his camp are claiming a star player would not get this treatment. And I think there might be some truth to that. Like if for whatever reason LeBron or Kawhi is
under
in a similar
carpet,
situation.
Pal. Under the carpet, gone.
Yeah, it's probably not going to get the same treatment. But how do you think his teammates are going to be reacting once they finally see him again down the road?
Yeah, it's interesting with this. When they want to make an example, they always find who's the guy most expendable. And it's interesting that even in this investigation, other players were suggested and around this. I heard Tyson Chandler's name was involved, and there was an anonymous player based on the interview with the young lady. And that took everyone's mind somewhere. And I'm sure this team was fractured just trying to deal with it. It felt like a cover-up. It felt like, okay, House is going to be the scapegoat, but he didn't do it by himself, and he didn't do it just for himself based on that interview with the young lady. That said, look, I'm a former athlete. I was in my 20s, young 30s, playing sports. As soon as I heard the word bubble, and then I knew the amount of time they had to spend in that same bubble, these interactions weren't going to stop just because they're in that bubble. And it's just, you know, Lou Williams got caught early, and House is the latest to get caught. But you know what they always say. What do parents say? If you got caught, that means it's not the first time you did it. You know, something else is going on. It's the bubble. She's in the bubble, so at least she's safe and healthy, I guess, assume. And to think you're going to stop some millionaires in their 20s from having some fun, I hate to tell people, but you're living in a fairy tale. So that said, if you're his teammate, I think from what I'm reading, they're going to give him some love in the sense of he took the bullet for maybe some other guys, but at the same time, a little disappointed that obviously he got caught up in this situation. So it's really, is he the sacrificial lamb, or is he just a guy that was so distracted that got these other guys involved in it? But it seems like he may be more of the sacrificial lamb, so teammates won't hold it too much against him.
Well, we'll see where it goes. Clippers looking to punch their ticket, and I think the Lakers will be right behind them, right? Like, that's where we're going, L.A. on L.A. And here in Toronto, we're waiting for the Raptors to punch their ticket tonight. You got a call on that? How you feeling about our Raptors tonight going up against Boston?
Unreal, man. The amount of intestinal fortitude, the coach terms come out. Like, you guys are gritty. Like, I thought this series was over, obviously 2-0, and then you guys hit the game winner, and then you crawl back up in it. This is an amazing series. I think Boston tonight, a little more firepower, high talent level, but hey, you guys have a closed fist, as they say. So it's not necessarily Kyle Lowry or anyone else sticking out. It's just the fact that you guys play as a complete unit. I look forward to more fireworks, but hate to say this, but I think Boston's going to get the edge.
All right, buddy. We'll leave it there. We'll see. You'll be hearing from us on Monday if the Raptors punch that ticket tonight. You can bank on it.
Gloating.
Yes, absolutely. You know it. Thank you, Marcellus.
All right, brother. Take care.
Marcellus Wiley from FS1, longtime NFLer. Regular here, and he's on Boston. I'll bet you he's not alone. I would think the majority of people down in the States anyway are probably on Boston. And to be fair, you know, the Celtics have blown out the Raptors in two games, and the Raptors had a miracle with 0.5 seconds to survive in Game 3, and they won in double OT. Boston's either been in every game or won big.
Maybe there's a Raptors blowout available. That's maybe if they shoot the lights out, maybe there's a Raptors blowout available. Because they haven't done that in this series, have they? Shoot the lights out?
No, not from start to finish. I mean, you're not going to hit every shot, clearly.
No, but have one of those nights where it's just everybody's dialed in. I don't know if they've had that night, so there's an option.
It is. Yeah. Yep. It's on the table for them. Someone just go out there collectively and do it, or one or two guys go out there and have the games of your career and drag your team into a conference final. And I'm sure they're thinking the same thing down in Boston. And I don't know who's going to be the man tonight, but someone will, you know.
Well,
someone's going to stick out, and it may be a superstar. It may just be a regular Joe who just has a great game.
You know what I mean, Brian, you can speak to this. Like, when you watch basketball, do you sense that the refs like can determine the outcome. And what I mean by that, you see a lot of times in hockey, the game sevens, the refs just let them play for the most part. If it's an egregious call, it's an egregious call. But a lot of times it seems like in a tight game, the refs want the players to sort it out. They don't want to be the story. Does that happen in basketball? Or are they going to call stuff?
I think it did in game six. You know, I think they did.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. It went both ways. Like, there could have been the call on OG. There could have been, you know, Nick Nurse.
The call at the basket, the Kemba foul. Yeah, that was like those. That was the refs kind of saying, you know what, we're not going to put a guy on the line to win it. And we're not either way, you know, either at the end of regulation or at the end of the first overtime. Yeah.
I would like to see a hard-fought game. And the refs not be a factor. Let the teams be a factor. I don't know if that can be achieved.
That would be ideal, but you know the thing is in the NBA, there's so you have to call
and
fouls.
The flopping and
like well, because it can go the other way if you quote unquote let them play and teams are like, man, how did we just go to the line only 9 times like that? That's maybe a way. Now the Raptors have not shot well from the line, so maybe they would prefer that. I'm sure they would sign off on that right now. Let's just both agree we're going to go to the line 10 times tonight, and that's it. Keep everyone out of foul trouble, and let's just see what happens during regular play and live play. But that's an element, right?
Yeah.
Like that's part of it. What the officials do tonight, nobody knows. And they're going to play. Hopefully they're not noticeable, and that means they did a great job.
Exactly.
If they are, people are yelling and screaming. And the nature of the beast in the NBA would suggest that's probably going to happen. I guess we'll find out and in which capacity tonight. John Hollinger will join us from The Athletic, longtime NBA insider and analyst. We'll get his take on the game tonight, an objective view. That's what we're trying to bring to the table. You know, what are the Celtics going to do well tonight? What does he think the Raptors will do well tonight? And get his thoughts on this latest from Adrian Wojnarowski as well. Woj just tweeting out, there's still no clarity on when the 2021 NBA season will start. But the league has told teams to expect an 8-week advance notice of a proposed opening night of the season. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But the more and more you hear and the more and more whispers are out there from the NBA and the NHL, it may not start until February, you know, January, February, March,
year.
Who knows?
Yeah, I think it's the new year for sure.
Yeah.
And same thing with hockey, too. I think it's they're going to take their time. I mean, you know, you look at both sides here. If the Stanley Cup could be handed out a little bit early here if these series get wrapped up, not in, you know, 7 games.
I always ask the question, Jamie, how will they ever, like, is this going to be just the new norm? Hockey's in the summer, too, or?
No, I don't think so, but
I don't think anybody involved with anything will have that. Like, they have to find a way to catch up.
Well,
I think there's any way the NHL does 82 games next. I don't care if they want to, have to, they're not doing it.
I think they're going to play into next summer for sure. I think they're going to try and chase the schedule over the next couple years. But, you know, you have to think about it. There's a TV contract, I believe, in the States coming up. Like, there's some things that are, you know, that the NHL, they've got to make some money. They're, you know, right now they're chasing it because of COVID. But the next season, you need fans in the stands. You need to generate income. And I think they're going to take their time. I would argue you're going to see 82 games, but it may be from, to your point, Brian, it might be February to August. You know, it might go that type of scenario. They might play through the summer because they've shown they've had success. Like, you know, I don't know how the numbers are, but I would imagine they had pretty decent numbers, you know, early on in those first couple rounds.
Yeah, and the networks are going to want the games. So they're going to want 82 games and a full slate of playoff games. And, you know, it would be ideal if it was on its general schedule, but that's not possible now because of COVID. Like, it was never going to start again in October or November. That wasn't going to happen. So I think they're probably willing to kick it down the curb a little bit more for another season and then hope 2 or 3 down the road you get back to the starting line
where
it's supposed to be. But I think the NBA, again, they've been trending in this direction anyway. They kind of want to play into July and August. And avoid the NFL as much as possible and kind of take on Major League Baseball's monopoly over the calendar for big four sports in the summer months.
Yeah.
So they may not be as disappointed, but I think hockey at some point will revert to where it generally is. John Hollinger coming up from The Athletic, his thoughts on the game tonight. Game 7 tipping off in about 2.5 hours. Raptors Celtics, you can watch it on TSN. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Game 7 tonight, about 2.5 hours away. Raptors Celtics. You got game 3 of the Eastern Final in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And Alex Killorn will not play. What's the latest on Braden Point?
He skated this morning, I saw.
Yeah. I haven't seen an official update saying he's out.
I think when the coach says, tune in tonight to see, he's playing. Like, yeah. Don't you think that there was no chance he was playing, that he would just say he's out tonight?
Yeah, I think he's playing too. Like, you skate in the morning, you're testing something out.
Yeah, like, remember the guys' noodles where they were, like, skate in the morning, they'd be flying out there, they'd come off the ice and be like, nah, just not going tonight. It's like, what? No, I'm not going tonight. I used to love that move. Like, just flying out in morning skate.
Yeah. No, bar down, no bucket.
Yeah, bar down, no bucket. No, I'm going to wait a bit. Not going to go tonight.
See how it unfolds. Yeah.
I always was under the impression if a guy was putting his gear on, like, you can play the game. I don't know. Guys are just, you know the sniffle story. It was mind-boggling.
Yeah. I mean, it happens. Like, I played with a guy who had a foot injury, and then all of a sudden after the game, couldn't play in the game, but after the game at the bar, he's the guy on the dance floor.
Oh, like, just who's sparks on the, coming off his shoes.
Yeah, like just putting a clinic onto the dance floor. I'm like, you missed the game tonight because you have a bad foot.
I got, you know? I'll get into it after, but I hurt myself at a bar too and missed time.
Well, that's going the opposite way, though. That's like, this guy got hurt, I would assume, on the ice and then couldn't play, then went to the bar.
Then he was breakdancing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's got to be the best. Like, come on, dude.
You just want to say, like, what is up with you, man? Yeah. You did not play in a professional sporting event, and now you're breakdancing on your ankle?
Yeah. You look like Michael Jackson on the dance floor right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, we could have used you.
Yeah.
We lost 3-2 tonight. Could have used you.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get to your story a little bit later on. Raptors Celtics tonight, and that is the nightcap, as it should be. Right, you got a game 7 featuring the former champs, or the current champs, I guess, the defending champs, and a team in a market like Boston. That should be the case. And then the Clippers looking to put an end to the Denver Nuggets. And to tee up these games, we're joined now by senior NBA columnist for The Athletic. Here's John Hollinger. How you feeling about game 7 tonight, John?
Well, I think everyone is a little excited, a little nervous. I mean, after what those teams gave us in game 6, a true classic playoff game, I think the bar has been raised for what we can hope for in game 7. So hopefully we get something closer to that as opposed to what we got in game 5 and a little bit in game 4. It was, not that close at the end. That said, I mean, I picked Boston in 7 before the series started. I still think they have a little bit of an advantage. I think it's a little easier for them to generate their offense than it is for Toronto. Last few games, the Raptors have been able to find a few more cracks, it seems like. So it's interesting. I mean, there's no home court here now for the 7th game, which actually hurts the Raptors, right? Because this game would be in Toronto normally. It's tough. I mean, if you hold a gun to my head, I'll say Boston. But I'm excited, man. I just think it's going to be a great game.
Well, we've been discussing it obviously for the past couple of days, and one concern that we have for both teams is the energy that was spent in Game 6. That going to double overtime and 4 different players on each team, 8 combined, playing 50 plus minutes. And Tice, I think, played something like 45 or 47. What kind of energy do you expect to see tonight?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, I think, especially from Toronto's side, because they've really been doing this the whole series almost. But Boston has bounced out its bench minutes a little more. On the other hand, like you talk about Tice, he in particular, he's never gone long like this before. He had never played 40 minutes in a game in his entire career. Until game 5. So how much will he have in the tank tonight? And then in general, it's funny because on paper, the Raptors are deeper, but neither team has really relied on its bench much. Raptors finally got something from Norm Powell, which I think really kind of made a difference in game 6. And, you know, can he be a little bit more of a spark plug maybe than Boston's guys are, who are basically just asked to play defense and not screw up? The fatigue issue is going to be an interesting one, especially, I'm really focused on Tice on Boston's side and then Toronto's guards, Lowry and VanVleet, who have hardly come out of the game the whole series.
with John Hollinger from The Athletic. So Pascal Siakam has obviously been a topic of discussion for us, and it hasn't been overly positive. I mean, he's beloved up here, as he should be. His journey, his play, his disposition, he's one of the easiest guys to like. So it's tough to find a position where Siakam could maybe take some negative feedback, but he's facing it now because he just simply has not been able to trigger anything offensively. So if you're Nick Nurse tonight, John, you know, are you still thinking I've got to get this guy going, or have you moved past him and just said, please defend as well as you have been, and, you know, move the ball, set some screens, do whatever you got to do, hit your shots if you're wide open, but does the offense get away from Siakam because it's game seven?
Well, you know, they say the definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, right? Mm-hmm. So I think what he's got to be asking himself is, are there different ways to get him involved? You know, he usually gets a lot of action in transition, and Boston has really shut that off. But if they can get him in the half court, getting the ball more on the move and more often without Jaylen Brown on him, I think having him post up against Jaylen Brown, I think it's pretty much proven not to work at this point, right? Let's scrap heap that for sure. But I still think there's other ways to get him in the mix. Again, if they can get him cutting and moving where he can get, you know, into a little more of his slashing game, and saw that open up maybe a little for him in the second half in game six. I mean, he got that one easy drive and missed the left-handed layup, but I mean, 99% of the time he's going to make that shot. And if you can get him looks like that, I think you're going to be really happy. So not a complete yes or no, I guess, on what you're saying. But if I'm Nick Nurse, I'm focusing on maybe different ways to get him involved. But I don't think you can just say, we're not going to do anything for Siakam and just throw it all on Van Vliet and Lowry. I think that's too easy for Boston to lock in on a shutdown at that point.
John, we were talking earlier about James Harden and his approach to the game, the way he plays the game. It seems so much about him, which he's a star player, it should be, but do you think that ever wins, that formula they kind of have right now? I know they've been talking on, you know, talking heads of saying D'Antoni's in trouble and this and that, but just do you think it ultimately wins one day with James Harden at the helm and leading the charge?
Sure. I actually wrote about this today for The Athletic because it does seem like we've seen the best of the Harden era Rockets, and now we're going to kind of get to the downslope here. I will say, I mean, they had a team with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green absolutely on the ropes, and then Chris Paul hurt his hamstring. So I don't think it's quite fair to say you can't win with James Harden. I think the current version of the Rockets is not good enough. Their second star, I think, is not quite at the level it used to be when you look at Westbrook now. And then the other guys around him are basically role players. So that version of what's around him, I think, is not good enough. He certainly hasn't been a dominating playoff performer if you look at his playoff history. But when you say it's about him, I actually disagree with that. I think he actually sometimes can be too passive and too focused on making the right play, and that when teams trap him and double him, or if somebody else has taken the ball, he's a little too willing to step aside and let those other guys operate and let Westbrook take over the offense late in games, for instance. Or you see with the double and trapping, I mean, technically he's making the right play out of all these plays, but you wonder sometimes if he got a little more thirsty and took a few more quicker shots, if that would be more effective against what the Lakers were doing.
It seems like the Lakers are on a collision course to get the Clippers. Do you think LeBron has some MJ in him where he's got Kawhi over there and Kawhi didn't want any part of the Lakers, so he's got a beef with Kawhi, maybe not off the court, but he wants to show that. He takes that approach where he's going to make it him against him, and that's the way he wants to dominate the series?
I think LeBron is a little too crafty, I think, to just make it about him versus Kawhi. What he's going to make it more about is him versus the Clippers, which means he's going to go after the weak link on the Clippers anytime he sees it. Anytime Lou Williams is on the court, he's going to try to get a switch and get Lou Williams on him, right? Anytime Landry Shamet is on the court, he's going to do the same thing. So he's not going to make it about him versus Kawhi. He's going to make it about him versus whoever the worst player the Clippers have on the floor is at the time. I mean, that's the way he's going to play it. So really interesting battle, though, shaping up when you look at LeBron James versus Kawhi Leonard. Obviously, this generational player over the last two decades versus the guy, as you all know up there, who led Toronto to the last championship and could very well lead the Clippers to the next one. So I think everyone is super excited about that. It's a shame you can't have that series in L.A. in Staples Center for seven consecutive games. It's unfortunate for the Lakers because they lose seven home games out of this, but so it goes.
Well, enjoy the two games tonight, and wherever this goes down in the bubble, it's going to be a fun one this evening and the rest of the way. Always great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this, John.
Thanks for having me.
John Hollinger from The Athletic, senior NBA columnist for The Athletic, former Grizzlies VP of basketball operations as well. And, he's that's the second guy now this hour who's, like, leaning Boston. But no one's certain. No one's sure.
No.
That's
telling
why
you, the
play.
X factor is the rap shooting the lights out, man. The rap shooting the lights out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it was Kia Nurse was saying, I saw up on TSN.ca earlier, like, this may simply come down to who shoots more threes as well. Because, you know, both teams are going to that's the NBA in a
that's
nutshell.
That's every game, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, and if the Raptors are going to shoot around 25%, they're probably not going to win. If they can get up
what
to
what was Pascal's point totals the last game?
I don't remember exactly where it was, but he was 0-for-5 from 3.
Yeah, and he was not good. Wasn't he like 2-for-14?
Well, basically, offensively, can he get any worse than what he was?
No, of course not. 0-for-5 from 3 is as bad as it gets if we're talking specifically about three-pointers.
Like, he's the ultimate X-factor right now. If he dials it in for one game, they move on or have a real good chance.
Yeah. and to play contrarian, I think on the flip side, they're saying that about Kemba Walker, who didn't put up any numbers in Game 6 either. And if he goes off for 35 or 40 tonight, then maybe that's the tip, you know, tipping of the scale, so to speak, in the form of one player's offensive production. But I think that's clearly the case with Siakam. And I'm curious to see what the game plan is for Nurse tonight. You know, that's why I posed the question to John. Do you keep going back to him? Like, if it's LeBron, you keep going back to him. If it's Harden, you got to keep going back to him. If it's Durant or Steph Curry, Siakam doesn't have that cachet based on his career, his resume, and just his offensive ability. So if you're Nurse, is it more of the old, listen, if you're open, you got to shoot. You know, it's the NBA.
Well, if he's ice cold, Brian, how often do you risk it early in the game and take a chance of going down early?
Well,
it's like how often can you risk it?
I don't know if you should. I guess that's what I'm saying, is I'm drawing up plays for Kyle. I'm drawing up plays for Van Vliet and maybe for
Norm.
Norm won't even be on the court until they make a substitution. But, you know, at some point, Siakam's going to get some sort of an isolation or open shots, and he's going to have to take them and he's going to have to hit them. But are you running plays to get him hot? I don't think you can. I don't think you can go
it's
into
risky,
a game
man.
Seven. It's very risky.
But he's got to do it on, you know, if he gets an opportunity, he's got to hit his shots. And that's where it comes back to Nick Nurse as a coach, in-game adjustments. He sees a guy that's going well, get him the ball. He sees a guy who's ice cold but can defend, keep the ball away from him offensively, but defensively make sure that he's in the right position. Like, that's – I kept tracking Twitter and just seeing people like, why the hell has this guy got a ball? Like, why has he even got the ball offensively? And then why is he in the game? And then it was quite clear that he was in the game because he's a good defender. If he wasn't a good defender –
oh, they'd have him out.
He probably would have yanked him.
Yeah. Like, DeRozan got pulled, remember, a couple of years ago in the fourth quarter of a close game. Casey put him on the bench. He didn't see the floor again because he was trying too hard. He was making too many mistakes. He was way out of rhythm, and he wasn't even defending. Like, at least Siakam defends. So why he's on the court.
He may have to make some hard decisions tonight. It's game 7.
Absolutely. There's no feelings involved here. No feelings. You know,
there's only two options, Brian, and you faced it on 18 at Weston. You know what they are. Do you remember?
Heart of a moose or heart
or
of a rat? Yes.
That's it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, hey, listen, it happens. It It happens. I saw something on the golf course that I have never seen before.
Oh, God. Recently. That is saying something.
That is saying something. Playing with the grappler, we were playing at a place where there were power lines, you know, around a course.
Grappler hit a power line and got a free drop.
Absolutely. I let him re-tee. It was on a par three. He hit a wedge, and he Randy Johnsoned a power line. Like, it was – I've never seen it before. Like, to
Sparks
hit this
fly?
Thing. Yeah, for starters, this thing was going 40 yards right if it didn't hit the power line. So it was actually lucky that it hit it, because then I'm like, you got to re-tee. Like, I can't right. – you know, that's not fair. You hit a power line. You know?
No, it's a free drop anyway. It's in the rules. It's not like you did him a favor. It's a drop.
Okay. Well, we were wondering that. Like, if not that anyone on tour is ever playing where there's power lines. You know, it's not Augusta National in the back nine. There's a power line. But we were wondering that. Like, I guess you would get to re-tee.
It's not a part of the golf course. It's just like any kind of stanchion or stage or whatever. You get a free drop. It's not a part of the golf course.
Okay. All right.
So you did good with the grappler there.
Let him re-tee, and he threw a dart, I believe, if I can recall correctly. But right off a power line, and made a massive noise. Like, the whole course was probably like, what is going on in that grouping? But shout out to the grappler. And time now for our best bets, brought to you by ProLine. I'm looking at the NFL board here, and I got three games here, three spreads. I like the Dolphins +7 in New England. I'm getting 7 points. Miami went in there week 17 last year and won outright. Now Brady's gone, and I think Miami Dolphins are one of those sneaky teams that are going to creep up on some people. Very good coach in Brian Flores. Young team. They went 5-5, I believe, over their final 10 games last year. Maybe 4-4. Divisional battle. I'll take the points. I'm going to take Indy big in Jacksonville. Jacksonville, I think, could be the early Miami from last season. Remember early in the year when they were getting stomped?
Garbage.
Just getting smoked. I think Jacksonville might be that team this year. And I'm going to lay the points with New Orleans at home. More familiarity. They're at home. The Bucs, Brady, on the road. Tough game. I will take the Saints. Throw down 20.
Dude,
and score 100.
It's not tough anymore. There's no home. There's no...
Yeah. It's still technically not in your building. It's on the road. Brady's never – he's. I think he'll be potentially a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit out of sorts.
Yeah,
no preseason
a little bit
games. Well, he's never played for anyone other than Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. I mean, I think he should be afforded that, like ease into it a little bit. If he doesn't light the league on fire, it doesn't mean he should retire, you know, after week one. It's a tough game. New Orleans is a really, really good team. Mm-hmm. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN1050Radio. ProLine, it's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. All right, so we'll come back and tee up Game 7 again tonight, the hockey game tonight. DeGrom on the mound for the Mets up against the Jays. And full slate of football. Harry Higgs, second and in contention at Safeway, which is clearly
Love
the
it.
Biggest story of the weekend.
4:05 on Monday.
Yep.
Harry Higgs, if he wins.
Has to happen. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, here we go. Game 7 tonight. Raptors-Celtics in a couple of hours on TSN. Jays in action down in Buffalo. Taking on Jacob DeGrom and the Mets. So we'll be watching that. We're watching the hockey game tonight. Of course, Game 3, basically a must-win for the Islanders, right? They got to win this one tonight.
Oh, yeah. You got to win it.
Got to have it. And we got football games. We got Harry Higgs, who's in contention down at the Safeway.
Imagine he wins it, man!
That'd be
oh
amazing.
Man!
Yeah,
are they even able to get the play in with those with the overcast and the fires and stuff?
I think it's been touch or go. They've had delays, you know, the first couple of days. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen over the final 2 days, like Napa Valley, and that's Northern California, and it's not good.
It's really not good. Visibility, all of that stuff. Like, it's scary out there.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Really scary.
Really scary. I mentioned this earlier. I want to see Vladdy up against DeGrom, and I guess he just hit a home run. Or off the wall and right. So it's single, but gets a lead. I'm reading this courtesy of Rob Longley.
Yeah.
So he knocked in a run anyway. So they're up quick on DeGrom. Take that.
Any contact on that dude is impressive.
Yep. It is. So shout out to Vladdy and the boys in Buffalo, Rochester, wherever you happen to be with the Blue Jays organization. Sean Reed Foley, we're thinking about you, buddy.
Yeah, Rochester playing catch with a guy in a hat and a mustache.
Just keeping warm, just in case.
Jean shorts.
Absolutely. Best Western in Roch, and there's a guy in the ball field to play catch with. There's your assignment.
Yeah, you're down there. Just make sure you're warm, and we'll text you if we need you. At some
we got to get to the bottom of that assignment because it is. I don't know.
Well, it's an alternate site. Yeah, you know, it's there's other
guys
down there.
Dude, he's by himself.
No, he's not. There's other guys down there.
That's their minor league system, technically. It's just they've created that.
Yeah.
We'll get into it, but it's meaningless.
Like, it's basically, you're not, you know, it's simulated games. It's nothing. It's if we ever need you, we'll call you, but basically you're gone. See you later. Yeah. We're moving on here. So anyway, full slate of sports all weekend. And it's going to be a blast, and we'll see where we're at with Harry Higgs and the Raptors and the NFL and Jays and hockey and the whole nine come Monday at 4 p.m. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy your weekends. We are back Friday or Monday at?
You just said it, 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority. With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.